This is Susan Livingston reporting for Sequitur for Expressions of Peace Radio. Expressions of Peace. Personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart. Sequitur is archived under the Expressions of Peace tab at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in peace and nonviolence in action. With habitat loss, ecological collapse, and consequent impending extinction as its main themes, Sequitur is a discussion of the natural consequences of actions at the individual, community, cultural, and species levels. Sequitur, it follows. Sequitur, the theme song, is by Zymphd. That's Z-Y-M-P-H-T. You can find more of his music on SoundCloud. Sequitur originated as the Global Extreme Weather segment on Extinction Radio. The weather and climate news felt too urgent to abandon when Extinction Radio went on hiatus last spring, so Sequitur became a freestanding podcast. Inspired by Guy McPherson's Nature Bats Last, the focus of Sequitur expanded beyond extreme weather events and natural disasters to consider the overarching issue of habitat loss. Sequitur's content further expanded under the influence of Derek Jensen's book The Myth of Human Supremacy to cover extinction events and their drivers for the whole web of life rather than only property destruction and loss of human life or monetized livelihood. Aho, Mitakwe Owasan, we are all related. Blessed Imok, we're coming up on another pagan high holy day, the feast of the goddess Brigid, halfway between the winter solstice and the vernal equinox. So I want to dedicate the first portion of today's show to a celebration of this important holiday. You can find the lyrics to the songs I'll be using at the Paradox blog page on panina.org. Both the goddess and her holiday come to us with various spellings and pronunciations. Considering the name of the holiday is an amalgam of in the belly, a reference to the gestation season of domestic mammals, and ewe's milk, gives us our best pronunciation guide. So one joyful aspect of the celebration is the return of fresh milk to the table. The modern English version of the name of the goddess features the unstopping of the middle consonant and the addition of the unvoiced final stop consonant, resulting in Bridget. The D was presumably inserted to protect the short vowel in the accented syllable, although the classic version has only one syllable and uses the long vowel, breed, as in bright. During my sojourn in Denmark in the late 80s, I knew several women named Birgitte, three syllables. Go figure. Brigid is the goddess of healing and purification, especially postpartum healing. So she is protector of livestock and wells at this vulnerable time of the year. She is the goddess of fire, the other purification element, specifically the fire of the hearth and the fire of the forge. So she is guardian of the home place and bringer of creative inspiration, and is therefore beloved of poets. You can hear references to all of these domains in the song Imbolc from Lisa Thiel's album Circle of the Seasons.
Calmest the wind, bless this house and all of our kin, bless this host and all of our kin, protect this house and all within, bless it, Bridget. Come into thy bed with a jam at thy heart and a crown on thy head. Waken the fire within our soul. makes us whole. Blessed Bridget, Queen of the Fire, help us to manifest our desires. May we bring forth all that's good and fine. May we give birth to our dreams in time. Blessed Bridget, comest thou in. Bless this house and all of our kin. From the source of infinite love, kindle the flame of our spirits tonight. Bridget, come into thy bed with a jam at thy heart and a crown on thy head. Awaken the fire within our souls. Awaken the fire that makes us whole. Blessed Bridget, Queen of the Fire, help us to manifest our desires. May we bring forth all that's good and fine. May we give birth to our dreams in time. Bridget, comest thou in. Bless this house and all of our kin. From the source of infinite light, kindle the flame of our spirits tonight. So,
Imbolc is the first day of spring by ancient reckoning. Brigid was traditionally honored by burning a white taper on the windowsill and creating altarpieces with 7 long white tapers, so it is easy to see Imbolc as the precursor of the Christian Candlemas Day. Maybe you weren't counting, but I noticed that the Imbolc song you just heard has 7 verses. In the absence of calendars, Imbolc was signaled by the blossoming of the hawthorn and the onset of the lambing season. Imbolc is the precursor of our Groundhog's Day, as the people would hope for a dreary day so that the hag Caich would stay asleep. If the day were sunny, she would be able to gather more firewood and therefore make the winter last longer. It is also quite possibly the inspiration for Valentine's Day, since Brigid would be honored with the preparation of a ritual bed. This bawdier aspect of the holiday is celebrated in the song Maiden of Spring from Heather Alexander's album Merlin's Descendants.
Dance with thee, gamble and pray.
perchance with thee, let this romancing be our song to sing. I will adorn with you flowers newborn with you, till we have worn through into the night. You have now heard my song, every last word is strong, like a wild bird along its morning spend hours there, and all the powers dare as we first kiss. Held tight within my arms, protected here from harms, moonlight to lend its charms, quickening our bliss. If we stay tarrying here in this fairy ring, we will be carrying love's special seal. Hand to hand, let us be free, but forgetlessly, ever too blessed be part of life's wheel. Come, lady, play with me. All of the day with me. Let me come lay with thee.
I'm including the Wild Song from Anuna's album Invocation, mainly because it is a beautiful example of a cappella choral music. The first person's singular lyrics speak of the wanderer goddess seeking shelter, and it has such a soaring, dreamlike quality that it seems a fine matrix for the integration of the spiritual content I've offered thus far, before transitioning to the more mundane considerations of these times. In my ears, it also captures the tentative energy of new beginnings at this time of the new moon. As you make that transition in your own great within, I invite you to hold the following important dates from the modern history of this weekend in your awareness. 1951, first nuclear detonation at the Nevada test site. 1960, four black students sit at a segregated lunch counter in Greensboro, South Carolina. 1972, Bloody Sunday, 14 killed in a civil rights march in Derry, Ireland.
New fallen dew, I have found that. Hello, everybody. It's Benjamin the Donkey. You know, worried about how we'll cope. We still thought we'd make it, but nope. Paradoxically strange, we had hope without change, and now we have change without hope. Hee-haw!
Yes, and doesn't that also confirm Newton's third law? I'm glad you could join me, Benji. Our show today is an exploration of just such paradox, and I'll be glad to have the support of your insight. Some of my colleagues and loved ones are having a hard time finding the gift at the heart of the disaster that is heralded by the latest move in the succession to the Oval Office. For me, it seems that we are being offered a mirror to open our eyes to the misogynistic, racist nature of our society, a society that is characterized by the highest level of income disparity in the post-industrial world. Of course we would elect a misogynistic, racist, rich white guy. It looks to me like most have moved into the anger stage of the grieving process.
You know, emotional thinking obscures what overshoot always assures. But if blame is your game, there are people to frame, and their names and addresses are yours. Hee-haw!
I know, right?
In looking for someone to cuss, or slyly with blaming discuss, just look in the mirror. Can't be any clearer. We have met the enemy. He's us.
I've heard that line before. It's from Pogo, right?
Hee-haw!
I learned about the futility of the blame game in my study of NVC, that's nonviolent communication, and I really took it to heart when I looked into the work of Jeremy Rifkin on mirror neurons. Rifkin says that it might even be the case that the only way we can recognize a quality in another is by the extent to which it resonates with something inside ourselves, something we've pushed into our shadow. Lisa White will have more to say about that later in the show, but I want to give a Standing Rock update first. According to a personal communication dated 27 January 2017, Charles Eisenstein believes an uprising is unstoppable. The question he poses is, what kind of revolution do we want? That will set the template, he says, for what comes after. Are we willing to take a fresh look at who we have become, how we got this way, and what direction we want to take going forward, whether we have a week remaining or a millennium? Or will we return to the old story of neoliberal austerity, protection of rights, incarceration of wrongdoers, American empire, full-spectrum dominance, and continuing ecological degradation? We need to understand that genocide and ecocide, human degradation and ecological degradation, are part of the same fabric, and that neither will change without the other changing. So many working-class people and minorities have been alienated from environmentalism because of the rhetoric of nothing else is important compared to this. Such rhetoric carries a patronizing, patriarchal subtext of, we know better than you do what you should be caring about. Whether our interest is in environment, social justice, or spiritual enlightenment, this cultural shadow work invites us to get over us versus them thinking, the mistaking of symptoms for causes, the relentless pursuit of solutions to the false or superficial problem we think we know how to solve in order to avoid that humiliating realization that we're actually clueless and overwhelmed, and the ways in which our strategies for change are part of the very thing we're trying to change.
You know, doomers should not underrate Homo sapiens' irrational trait. The unthinking brutes won't grasp overshoots, just blame folks they already hate. Hee-haw!
These are the quandaries, dialectics, dilemmas, and paradoxes we will be exploring on Sequitur as we continue our journey into 2017, where any given show might be our last, whether due to the collapse of the grid, an end of the internet as we know it, an invasion of desperate refugees, a new pandemic, a massive natural or man-made disaster, an unfavorable executive order, or any of the myriad reasons why I've become so completely unwilling to make plans other than with a highly hypothetical energy. Case in point, this week's show. I had every intention of presenting a thorough climate change update, but recent developments at Standing Rock and elsewhere concerning protection and healing for our Mother Earth seemed much more urgent. And here we are halfway through our time together, and I feel like we just got started. But the Imolc celebration is time-sensitive, and never let it be said that Penina overlooked a sincere, hopium-free opportunity for celebration. You ready to take us in, Benji?
You know, we experience life as a fusion of autonomy and collusion. Much that's connected remains undetected because of our free will illusion. We live under a cursed oath, which nurtures and dooms us both. We harbor a drive to struggle and strive for improvement, enhancement, and growth. Between two worlds, out on the fence, our transition gets sometimes intense. This is not from split-mind schizophrenia kind, but sane cognitive dissonance. Hee-haw!
Cognitive dissonance rules at Standing Rock as the situation becomes at the same time more promising and more dire. The New York Times reported three supposedly good news items from the courtroom on 19 January. 1. U.S. District Court Judge James Boasberg denied Dakota Access Pipeline attorney's request for a temporary restraining order, which sought to block publication in the Federal Register of the Army Corps of Engineers notice for an environmental impact statement on the Lake Oahe crossing. 2. Upon that, the Army Corps of Engineers officially published a notice of intent in the Federal Register to prepare a partial environmental impact statement, or EIS. This opens a formal scoping comment period lasting through February 20th. The notice, quote, invites interested parties to identify potential issues, concerns, and reasonable alternatives that should be considered in an EIS, unquote. The Army Corps asks only for comments on 1. Alternative locations for the pipeline crossing the Missouri River, 2. Potential risks and impacts of an oil spill, and potential impacts to Lake Oahe, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's water intakes, and the tribe's water, treaty, fishing, and hunting rights, and 3. Information on the extent and location of the tribe's treaty rights in Lake Oahe. You can help. Even if you can't address all three points, at least write a letter addressing the second point. Here it is again. Potential risks and impacts of an oil spill. I imagine data on the potential likelihood of an oil spill would also be considered. Please see the map at the Sequitur Paradox blog page for a visual representation of that likelihood.
Attention passengers.
We interrupt this program to bring you breaking news. The new administration is apparently determined to fast-track the EIS and issued an executive order on 25 January that calls upon ACE to, quote, consider, to the extent permitted by law and as warranted, unquote, whether this environmental review should be canceled.
The destination of this train is Braintree.
Federal courts have previously ruled that agency decisions cannot be reversed simply because a new president is in power. So this order could just be a bunch of hot air. However, it seems clear that ACE is cooperating with the fast-track ploy, as in contrast to its usual practice, the agency is not accepting public comments on its website on the NOI. In order to comment on ACE's NOI, you must mail or hand-deliver written comments to Mr. Gibb Owen, Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, 108 Army Pentagon, Washington, D.C., 20310-0108. That's gib.a.owen.civ@mil, short for military. This contact information is also posted on the Sequitur Paradox blog page. Advance arrangements must be made to hand deliver comments. You must include your name, return address, and NOI comments, Dakota Access Pipeline Crossing, at the beginning of your written comments or as the subject of your email. And in the body of your message, please include the following language, quote, "I am concerned about the vast and dire consequences that potential leaks at the proposed Lake Oahe crossing will have on the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's treaty rights, and urge the Army Corps to look at routing alternatives. I will not be silenced," unquote. Jake Tracy, writing for Yes Magazine on 25 January, also offers a sample statement, but I would use such a long letter only as an email. I recommend against sending a sealed envelope. Use a postcard. It gets through security more easily.
You are listening to Sequitur, a production of Expressions of Peace, personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart. Sequitur is archived at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in peace and nonviolence in action. Hee-haw!
Thank you, Benji. Returning now to my legal report. Number 3, the North Dakota Supreme Court ruled that water protectors could be represented by out-of-state attorneys under two conditions. Said attorneys must be working pro bono, and they must apply for a temporary license by a newly streamlined process. And there's a fourth item that was not presented as good news. The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals dismissed the request for an injunction to stop DAPL to prevent the destruction of sacred historical burial sites, a point rendered moot since the destruction had already taken place, despite the easement to proceed with the work not having been granted. Meanwhile, the militarized authorities deployed a ground-to-air missile launcher nearby, presumably to disable water protector surveillance drones. It was removed after the above court rulings, presumably in deference to public outcry. And then, while everyone was distracted by events in D.C., the water protectors once again fell under heavy physical attack as they attempted to prevent the DAPL contractors from continuing with their illegal work on the pipeline. I had thought I was pretty well grounded in nonviolence, but I found myself celebrating tactics involving property destruction in the Facebook group Occupy Together Activist Support.
You know, cognitive dissonance will thrive as we do the doomer dive. When might makes right, what once was wrong might become suddenly right to survive. Hee-haw!
Mixed messages abound. The Sioux Tribal Council has not been without internal conflict, as Sacred Stone Camp founder LaDonna Allard and council member Ed Blackcloud were apparently the only dissenting voices in the decision of 20 January 2017 to ask for aid from federal law enforcement in, quote, "removing protesters from the district and setting up posts blocking those who do not live or work in the district from entering." The district requests these actions be taken in the next 30 days, unquote. This sounds to me like an open invitation to martial law. Color me deeply disappointed in the tribal council.
Attention passengers.
We interrupt this program again to bring you more breaking news. Michael J. Sanato, writing for the 26 January 2017 issue of Counterpunch, reports EPA confirmation that 40,000 pounds of rat poison was illegally distributed to ranches in the surrounding area. Might this be the origin of what has come to be known as the DAPL cough? Will this instance of covert chemical aggression combine with the insult of the executive order overriding the EIS and fast-tracking the pipeline construction be enough to move the tribal council to reverse its decision and put out a call for the return of the water protectors? or would such a move be encumbered by too much loss of face? Lakota People's Law lead attorney Chase Iron Eyes has put out such a call, but who will respond if they imagine they might be poisoned? I imagine that must be why Linda Black Elk of the Medic and Healer Council reports that the rumors of airborne chemical attacks that have been rampant for months have been proven to be false under close medical scrutiny. Say what? I don't think the doctors are doing any environmental health and safety testing. I'm getting dizzy, Benji.
Hee-haw!
For help with a different perspective, a larger view might be effective. From a cosmic viewpoint, there is no disjoint. That's just humans being subjective.
Hee-haw!
So let's bring it closer to home. There are other indigenous groups, as well as less identity-oriented activist groups local to pipeline projects elsewhere, that are not as high profile as Standing Rock, but are in no less need of support from water protectors. Find a movement near you and support it. There's a map at the Sequitur Paradox blog page, but I didn't want to feature it due to the presence of a certain name in the image title, so you'll have to scroll down to see it. Here's the listing from the 2 January post by Inside Climate News. Line 3, Enbridge. From Hardisty, Alberta to Superior, Wisconsin. Up to 760,000 barrels per day, nearly double the capacity of the old line. Inside Climate News reports, quote, a recent public meeting on the pipeline was cut short after Enbridge officials said they felt intimidated, unquote, by citizens who showed up. Line 5, Enbridge. Under the Straits of Mackinac, which connect Lake Huron to Lake Michigan, environmentalists won so-called safety improvements on this pipeline as part of a settlement deal for its 2010 tar sands spill from Line 6B. Several Native American tribes have sued for a full environmental review before the work begins. Line 61 Twin, Enbridge, northern Wisconsin to central Illinois, parallel to four existing Enbridge lines, one of which is named Line 61. With support from the Sierra Club and other less high-profile groups, local landowners are trying to pressure state legislators to limit private companies' use of eminent domain. Access Northeast, Spectra Energy. New segments in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New York, along an existing line. The Massachusetts Supreme Court ruled that the utilities could not charge their customers to pay for the new pipeline, so the utilities withdrew their support. Local activists are working to pass town council resolutions against the project. Pilgrim Pipelines, Pilgrim Pipeline LLC. Two proposed lines to carry crude oil from Albany, New York to Linden, New Jersey, and refined products in the other direction. Each pipeline would have a capacity of 200,000 barrels per day. More than 20 municipalities along the route have passed resolutions against the project, and New York state regulators have warned about the environmental impacts of pipeline construction, particularly on local waterways. Atlantic Coast Pipeline, Dominion Resources, Duke Energy, Piedmont Natural Gas, and AGL Resources, and Mountain Valley Pipeline, Mountain Valley Pipeline LLC. Two pipelines that run from West Virginia to Virginia and North Carolina. Both pipelines have been tied up in court proceedings in defense of property rights. The Bold Alliance, an advocacy group that played a pivotal role in stopping the Keystone XL, plans to hire pipeline fighters in the Mid-Atlantic region in 2017. Atlantic Sunrise, Williams. 183 miles of new pipeline in Pennsylvania, along with additional upgrades at Transco facilities in the Transco Natural Gas Pipeline System in Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. Trans-Pecos Pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners. From Texas to Mexico, 1.4 billion cubic feet of natural gas per day. Construction started in September, and resistance has provided fertile common ground between environmentalists protecting Big Bend Ranch State Park and local ranchers protecting private property rights. Sabal Trail, Spectra Energy, NextEra Energy, Duke Energy. 515-mile natural gas pipeline that runs through Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. Construction has begun, but demonstrations and civil disobedience events are ongoing. Bayou Bridge Pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners. 162-mile oil pipeline from Lake Charles to St. James, Louisiana, an extension of an existing pipeline system that would connect to Dakota Access so that Energy Transfer could ship oil from the Bakken tar sands to Louisiana. The proposed route would cross more than 700 bodies of water, as well as disrupting hundreds of acres of wetlands, the best protection Bayou Country has against floods. And for heaven and earth's sake, wherever you are, your participation in the Stop Driving Global Warming monthly 4-day boycott is crucial to demonstrate that you are ready to break your addiction to on-demand vehicular mobility. Conceived as an annual event in response to the false flag flavor of 11 September by Blackfoot Elder Running Wolf, it has evolved into a monthly event in order to have a real financial impact by reducing consumer demand and contributing to addiction recovery. Last but not least, it's not too late to move your money. Dig deep as you divest. See the illustration on the Sequitur Paradox blog page for a more comprehensive look at the dozens of financial institutions who are complicit in reinforcing the grip of big oil on your financial security. Remember, they're just doing their job, and it's up to us to render that job irrelevant. Wouldn't you rather support their unemployment with your tax dollars than allow them to use your working assets for such nefarious purposes?
Hee-haw! Hee-haw!
Benji, wait for your cue. I included only the second half of Lisa White's segment on greed on Sequitur Wetico 2 weeks ago. Now I want to share the first half of her segment, which is a more general introduction to the topic of working with the shadow self, that part of our unconscious that ego uses as a sort of land of exile for those aspects of ourselves that we are unable or unwilling to integrate into the self we present to the world. Your mic is open, Lisa.
Hello, this is Lisa White with Intuitive Balance, and I just want to say thank you to Susan for inviting me to be here today to share some of my thoughts. The projection of our shadow helps us avoid seeing that which we do not want to see or can't see in ourselves.
Hello, everybody. It's Benjamin the Donkey. You know, molecules bounce one by one, making blame something much overdone. To increase serenity, escape your identity and find that our choices are none. Hee-haw!
So, for example, if you can't see or don't want to see that you might be a little bit impatient, maybe somebody who is really impatient will come into your life to trigger you and really push a button, and you may go, wow, that person's really impatient. I don't believe how impatient they are. And you start judging them and polarizing against them. But actually what you're seeing in them is something that you can't recognize in yourself. Or maybe you do recognize it at some level, but you sweep it under the carpet.
Hee-haw!
This is a dynamic that we see in cultures. We see it in individuals. We see it in societies. We watch it manifest through elections.
To ignore face-to-face debasement, we look for some distant replacement. We then give a pass to those kicking our ass, and that's what we call displacement. Upon some closer inspection, hostility has a connection. Angry debasement is often displacement, and even more often projection. Hee-haw!
When we're projecting something onto someone else, We're doing that to avoid seeing something within ourselves. So why would we avoid wanting to see something about ourselves? Well, mostly that comes from fear. The fear of being rejected and the fear of being disconnected. In very basic terms, being disconnected is a base survival fear. If you're disconnected from your tribe, from that which supports your survival, then you will die.
You know, whom to blame? Let's do some reflection. In selection for our collection, we hide from detection our secret rejection, the connection that's called projection. Hee-haw!
In psychological terms, we have so many things available to us. We can go to the grocery store, we have food, shelter, in modern societies, but we still have that basic survival fear of being disconnected. And a lot of times this manifests through psychological and emotional issues. So we'll adapt strategies to help assuage that fear and to feel better about ourselves so that we feel like we do belong. Some of the strategies would be to project something onto someone else and be a victim, to blame and shame and say it's all them, it's not about me. And another way to do it is by adopting addictions and trying to find distractions to avoid seeing what we need to see. Life is about healing and growing and experiencing both and, seeing that life does consist of light and dark, happy and sad, good and bad, me and you. And when we become polarized, and when we adapt by adopting addictions and distractions, we aren't really seeing the world in its whole as it is. And so when we're avoiding one part of ourselves or one part of the reality that we are seeing in front of us, then the other part of reality, that other side, needs to find an outlet. Energy seeks balance. These types of dynamics seek balance. And so when we're avoiding something about ourselves through addictions or distractions, we're going to see dynamics pop up in our lives to try to rebalance us and to try to get us to see that which we are afraid of. I do also want to add that sometimes we don't want to see the good in ourselves, and we blame and shame ourselves, and we will tend to self-criticize. So I wanted to just point that out, because the misperception of the shadow is that it's all bad. And the shadow is something basically in our unconscious that we can't see or acknowledge. And that can also include many beautiful things about ourselves. Maybe somebody grew up in a situation where they had great talents, or they had a wonderful voice, or they were very artistic, but that particular trait in their household got them criticized or was shamed. So as a strategy, they chose to shove that into the shadow, because being shamed and criticized as a young child would mean survival fear. If mommy and or daddy doesn't like me, then I won't get fed, I won't get clothes, I won't have shelter. So our adaptation strategies go back to very young childhood experiences where we adapt to survive. So I just wanted to point that out, because the shadow does include many beautiful things that we see. And a lot of times we're projecting only the bad onto somebody, and we fail to see that they also have wonderful qualities. And those qualities could have been shoved into their shadow, and we can't see them. This is where the term scapegoat can come in. And a scapegoat is someone who tends to take the hit in certain groups or societies as the bad one. It's the black sheep of the family.
You know, scapegoating's what humans do. It's focused on outnumbered few. This is our norm. We'll never transform, and some folks are going to hate you. When figuring out whom to hate and which boogeyman to create, it's hard to decide. So look from outside. There's no one to blame. It's just fate. Hee-haw!
The scapegoat is actually sometimes, to me, on a soul level, a very powerful person. because they take on dark collective energy of hatred, judgment, fear, anger, and they take that as a hit from the collective. They are easily scapegoat because a lot of their good has been shoved into their shadow. I also wanted to point out that a lot of these dynamics are unconscious. We don't know why we react and respond the way we do. It's automatic. It's adaptation for survival. It's patterns that we have adapted that are so ingrained in our system, we just aren't aware that we are doing them. So while you're thinking about maybe some of your behaviors or maybe the way you might project, give yourself a lot of compassion and love because you are only doing what has been normal and what has helped you survive. And so I always want to let people know when doing shadow work and or looking at projections to send a lot of love to yourself because it's hard work and it's not good or bad. We're not looking for perfection here. We're looking for awareness because awareness is the beginning of shifting these dynamics. It's a way to go, ah, now I see. Now I have a choice. When we're aware, we have a choice. When we're unconscious, we react. So just keep those things in mind if you're starting to think about some of your projections, some of your shadows, if you're willing to go into deeper work with someone, always send yourself love. This isn't about beating yourself up and finding something wrong with you. This is about awareness, to find a way to see life as both and. You're neither good or bad. You're neither right or wrong. It's really hard to see ourselves as both and in a society that programs us to see ourselves as incomplete or imperfect. Look at your fears and seeing something in someone else that you might see in yourself. We're afraid of seeing Trump in ourselves. We're afraid of seeing that awful, icky neighbor in ourselves. We're afraid of seeing that sinister brother-in-law in ourselves. This is where we start. Find that awareness. Whoever it may be, or whatever it may be, that you're afraid of seeing in yourself, or that you may be afraid of revealing to the world as a true talent and skill that can be healing to others. And if you need more help, I also work with clients to help go through this type of work, to be a witness, a compassionate, neutral witness to your process and to the revealing of yourself to yourself. So thanks for listening, and thank you, Susan, for having me, and be well.
You are most welcome, Lisa White, and thank you for reminding me that before I sign off, I have one more important announcement or invitation to share, and I'll preface it with a blast from my not-too-distant personal past. 8 years ago, more or less, I postponed my entry into BayNVC's year-long leadership program to instead make the journey to Washington, D.C. for an inauguration in support of Code Pink Women for Peace, and then wrap up some other commitments I had in Abingdon, Virginia, where I was living at the time. Even back then, I was unwilling to incur the footprint of commuting by airplane 3 or 4 times a year to California for the residential intensives that were the flagship component of the program. I'm grateful that they were willing to commit to supporting my participation in 2010 before they had any sense of what the paying enrollment would be. I made the move in August 2009 so I could participate in the women's retreat with guest trainer Anne Barit and learn to facilitate the powerful healing role-play process she had learned directly from NVC's founder, the late Marshall Rosenberg, that I had seen him demonstrate at a weekend workshop in Atlanta. But I digress. So, former President Obama had already promised a surge in Afghanistan, so I couldn't vote for him, having previously signed a peace pledge that I would vote only for peace candidates. But he had also made some promises on the campaign trail that my Code Pink sisters and I broadcast widely. For example, closing Guantanamo. I used to have a list of the promises, including dates and venues. Maybe I'll dig it up again for some future show more specific to peace and nonviolence. Anyway, my part was cutting up thousands of lengths of pink ribbon that we tied around the fingers of people on the metro, in the mall, wherever we could detain someone peacefully for 20 seconds to enlist their cooperation. On the ribbon was printed the words, "Obama, keep your promises for peace." Well, you see how far that got us, right? To the best of my knowledge, and despite popular outcry, Obama has not returned the Nobel Peace Prize, medal, or the money. All of this is by way of explaining why I don't do electoral politics anymore, and I hope to never again set foot in Washington, D.C. But I do want to extend a deep bow of gratitude to those of you who do, especially if you participated in the Women's March, either in D.C. or closer to home. I'm one of those people who believe that everyone's efforts are needed, no matter what those efforts look like. For me, an action can be termed a success by the simple fact that it took place, regardless of whether or not it affected any changes, whether or not it got this or that media coverage, and no matter how many people and groups did or did not endorse it or show up and participate. Just don't get too attached to the outcome, like I did. It's an invitation to burnout. Participate because you can't not. Participate because it meets your need for authentic self-expression, not because you think you're going to change the world. The march I'm wanting to promote right now is the March for Science, formerly known as the Scientists' March, but renamed to highlight the fact that participation from non-scientists will be deeply appreciated, although the website is still scientistsmarchonwashington.com. The date of the march is supposed to be announced there tomorrow, but I didn't want to hold up this show for another day, what with Imbolc happening, the new moon already waxing, and the Standing Rock situation far from closure. The closed Facebook group for scientists was launched a week ago and had more than 300,000 members in its first 12 hours. A few dozen of my Facebook friends have already responded to my invitation to like the public page for scientists and non-scientists that was launched soon thereafter. The website is under construction, but you can go there and sign up to receive updates. That URL again is http://www.scientistsmarchonwashington.com. No punctuation, no spaces. Patterned after the Women's March, the intention is to have solidarity marches in cities and towns from coast to coast and around the world, besides the main action in D.C. Here's a preliminary mission statement. Quote, "We accept the following as provisionally true. The Earth is becoming warmer due to human action. The diversity of life arose by evolution. An American government that ignores science to pursue ideological agendas threatens not only the environment of which humans are a part, but America itself. Scientific research in the United States is underfunded. Politicians who devalue expertise risk making decisions that do not reflect reality." Close quote. Well, that's it for now. However you feel about the inclusion of humanity in the sixth extinction or recent events in the multidimensional geopolitical circus, don't give up your efforts to be the best human being you can be and to do what you can do, what you can't not do, to bring forth, as the Pachamama Alliance says, an environmentally sustainable, socially just, spiritually fulfilling human presence on our beautiful blue, green, and brown planet. Special thanks for contributions to Sequitur Paradox, to Lisa White for her introduction to our personal and cultural shadow self, to Benjamin the Donkey for his sometimes irreverent but always relevant commentary, to musical guests Lisa Thiel, Heather Alexander, and Anunya for Imbolc celebration music, and to Zimft for the Sequitur theme music. Until next time, this is Susan Livingston. Thank you.
Connects us is one.